This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
Here at Audi, we have some good news to share with the world. Unfortunately, our good news is bad news for our competition. So to soften the blow, we brought in the very best at delivering bad news. Someone's mom.
The Audi A4 is the biggest, fastest, most fuel-efficient car in its class. Oh, honey, I know it's hard to hear, but it'll be okay.
I'm David Jones, inviting you to test drive an impressive new Audi A4 Premium today at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com. Audi. Truth in engineering.
Well, Peter Kessler is a golf historian working at Golf Channel, PGA Tour Network. He's got the number one podcast in the game. It's called The Peter Kessler Show. It's available at revolutiongolf.com. Always a pleasure to welcome my friend Peter Kessler back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hi, Peter.
It's great to be with you, my friend. Are you well?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I played two of the greatest golf courses in the world last week. I played at Maidstone and National Golf Links of America in Southampton and East Hampton, respectively, and it was the best 1-2 punch that I've ever had, and I've had some good ones.
Yeah, that's spectacular golf. Oh, my God. Now I'm jealous. Open champion. We have played 12 rounds of major championship golf this year. Bubba Watson, Martin Kaymer, and Rory have been the leaders for 11 of those rounds. Martin and Rory went back-to-back. Bubba was a shot out of the lead after the first round. How surprising is that?
Well, not that surprising, because you really expect the guy who is most on form to be the one for whom the golf course will yield to his or her brilliance. And normally there's somebody who just seems to rise a little bit above the rest of the crowd. Now, that doesn't mean that they're always going to be leading or go wire to wire or one shot behind, as in the Bubba case. But, yes, it's extraordinarily unusual to have three leaders, essentially, for 4 days each. But it's not a shocker, because when the winning score of a championship is going to be somewhere between 2 and 4 under a day kind of thing, mm-hmm. which you don't get at the Masters, but I mean, which you do get at the Masters, and you can get at the Open Championship like we just had, when it yields to that kind of golf, 2 to 4 under, the best player is playing the best golf because he's hitting drivers, and that's the way birdies are getting made when those double-digit under par scores are being made cumulatively over 4 days. At the U.S. Open, I think you have the pack bunched because pars become so precious when you miss the greens that are difficult to hit. But still, I'm not surprised that one guy in a major championship would trend along that top line and close out the deal.
Rory, is he great yet? Does he need the career Grand Slam to be great? What's going to make him great?
Well, you just got to keep doing what he's doing, really. I mean, you know, it's a pretty cool career so far. He's got three legs. He's 25 years old. You know, he almost had the Masters for the first leg a few years ago. He'll be going for it on his next go-around, so that'll be particularly special. But it almost will feel like, where did that come from? Because the rest of the supporting record isn't quite as strong, but it's starting to shape up. I mean, you got the Australian Open, and he won at Quail Hollow, and he won at Honda, which is another great golf course, and he came from 7 behind to win the BMW Championship in Great Britain this year, and just picked up the Australian in December over Adam Scott. So he's starting to pepper his resume with some very cool stuff. You know, if anybody wants to start about the Hall of Fame stuff, it's silly unless he's going to retire today. Let's let the thing unfold a little bit, which is what's so funny about the new Hall of Fame committee is there's nothing for them to do because there's nobody to put in, because everybody who's in is already in. There isn't anybody who's on the list waiting. You know, Patrick Harrington and Rory are your next two. That's, you know, those guys are going to be gone by that time. So I think it's spectacular so far, more Mickelson-like in its inconsistency than Woods-like in its consistency, but better than Mickelson because it's more and sooner.
Any doubt in your mind he wins a Masters?
No, I don't think so. It's an ideal golf course for him. You know, a ball that, you know, that goes very high, that stops on those greens, and, you know, a draw ball works. Just everybody talks about how you need to fade it there. Well, that's not true. Draw ball hitters have won just as many golf tournaments as cut ball hitters have. No, it's a perfect golf course for him. He had the 54-hole lead there. He had the 63-hole lead, as a matter of fact, there. So, you know, he had a chance to win at Augusta National. That's a wonderful golf course for him. He can hit all the par fives with an iron shot. He drives it farther than anybody else. It's a golf course you can hit driver because it's forgiving. I would have thought that would have been the easiest of the four majors. If you had to pick one going forward, that'd be the one you'd want him to have to win because it'd be the easiest.
Are you surprised by the seeming resurgence of Sergio?
No, I just wish he could take it up a notch. You know, he gets... You know, he's been playing some really good golf the last couple of years because he's putting better. He's always been a great ball striker, but his putting has been a very iffy affair. You know, he's missed a lot of 1- and 2-footers over the years with a conventional grip, and now he's got a semi-claw thing going, and he's become a very, very fine putter by tour standards, which means you're really, really good. So I'm not surprised to see him, you know, in the places where he should or might be able to close, but again, he flinched at the Open Championship. He had a bunker shot out of the putt bunker on the par three, and he did something all recreational players do, which is he got shorter during the swing, and the club hit the ground sooner, and the divot was deeper, and he never got back to the golf ball, and the golf ball didn't go anywhere. He flinched, and historically, he's been a flincher. You know, at that same golf course in 06, playing against Tiger in the final round and wearing all canary yellow, he three-putted that first hole, and it went downhill immediately from there. So he's gotten himself into the spotlight, but has not been, you know, the guy who sings the great tune at the end and gets the standing ovation yet.
We are speaking with Peter Kessler, host of The Peter Kessler Show, available at revolutiongolf.com. I don't know that we've got the chance to go into this in detail this morning. I want to have you back. Major championships. When did the U.S. amateur stop being a major championship? We count Jones as amateurs, but we don't count Tigers or Jacks. And what year did the Masters become a major? 1934? I'm really fascinated by that change or that morphing of major championships.
When Jack Nicklaus won his amateurs in 59 and 61 at the Broadmoor and Pebble Beach, respectively, it was still a time when some of the finest players in the country did not turn pro. Ken Venturi, Frank Stranahan, well, before Ken did turn pro, but Frank Stranahan, Kenny Venturi, and Harvey Ward were as good as the pros they competed against in the 1950s. Stranahan finished second to Hogan in two of the three majors that Hogan won in 1953. I mean, you know, these were, and Kenny, of course, went on to have a super career and won the U.S. Open, but these guys were as good as the pros, but there wasn't any money. And Eddie Lauer, who was the 10-year-old caddy for Francis Ouimet in 1910 when he beat Varden and Ray in the playoff at the U.S. Open, which made it an American game for the next 60 or 70 years, was the guy who bankrolled those three guys in the 1950s, Stranahan, Ward, and Venturi. When Jack won his two amateurs in 59 and 61, they were still considered U.S. amateurs, and then money began because television and Arnold got married in 1960. So after that, it changed. That's when I say Jack's counted. By the time Tiger came around, nobody was a lifelong amateur anymore unless they really didn't want to turn pro for some reason, like they weren't good enough but could still be a terrific amateur. And then the question about the Masters becoming the Masters is, it was the Masters right away because in 1934, when the first Masters was held, it was held on the week right after the Grapefruit League, all of the exhibition baseball right. games were held in Florida. All the sports writers were taken up in a private train to Augusta National, put up at the Biltmore Hotel in the Bon Air, and they were the first ones to write about the tournament. And because Jones was still the most golden boy of American sports, handsomer than any movie star, more popular than Babe Ruth, and because he had just retired, it immediately became a major championship because of the timing of the events and the Depression just starting to move into slightly better territory, but people looking for hope in the sports pages, and Jones still provided that, as did Grantland Rice, who would be writing about it and memorializing it.
So there was a time we had five majors?
Including the Western Open?
Well, yeah, there was that.
The Western Open was considered a major, really, when Walter Hagen was picking them off.
Hmm.
You know, it was clearly by the end of World War II when there was no further discussion of any kind about those with the four majors, even though Augusta National started in 1934 and was immediately on the map, and then securely on the map because the second year Sarazen made the double eagle, which was the shot heard round the world. And if it wasn't solidified in 1934, it was in 1935, and forevermore, if you won one, that was a major. And by World War II, the Western Open had slipped off the mountain slope.
Before I let you go, James Garner passed away last weekend. Seemed like a great guy. Loved the game of golf. I'm curious, your favorite non-professional golfer that you had the chance to interview?
James Garner and Robert Wagner. Mm. They were both about the same. They were both like sixes or sevens at their very best. And Jim Garner's brother, Tom Garner, was an assistant professional at Oakmont Country Club in Glendale, California, not to be confused with the one in Pittsburgh. And he was a fantastic guy. Actually, he was the first guy, this is going back a really long time now, that I ever saw fix a divot with seed and sand. I remember the first time he had this mixture on the cart and he poured some out, and I said, what is that? And he said, you pot it. You pot the plant with this. And that was his brother. And he was a great guy. I played a round of golf with him. I walked some with Robert Wagner when he was playing around. Garner was a big guy. The girls were crazy about him. It was like being with Sean Connery. Girls would just like line up and say, I told my husband if there was one other man that I would ever, 50 of them in a row, and just line right up behind James Garner. Same thing with Sean Connery.
I always appreciate the time and the stories. Thank you, Peter.
Great to be with you, my friend.